this rare time alone. While Saxon had continued to sleep across the hall, leaving the master bedroom to her, tonight was different from previous nights. Kyla had the estate to herself. She didn't have to worry about the energy of her thoughts, or even the sound of her voice if she mumbled. Saxon had left the house. For reasons Kyla wasn't privy to, there was another vampire posted out front, guarding Kyla from the expansive front veranda, and the entire changing of the guard, so to speak, had been handled in hush-hush fashion. Nonetheless, if Saxon had thought Kyla was sleeping that deeply, he had underestimated her watchfulness, her years of vigilant training. Kyla was always aware of her surroundings, and her mind was always turning. Thinking, plotting, deciding. And she knew what she had to do to keep the ball rolling forward. Somehow, some way, Kyla had to get the primary targets together. Nathaniel and Jocelyn, Marquise and Siapori, Nakari and Deanna, Kagan and Ariel, and their sons. She had overheard Saxon speaking to another male, named Santos, who she now knew was his brother, briefly on his cell phone before they had started to play Scrabble, before she had decoded Owen's message, and now the conversation took on a whole new meaning. Saxon had mentioned a couple by the names of Dario and Lily, and from what Kyla could piece together, the couple was coming to Darkmoon Vale, arriving on Saturday morning. And the House of Jaden, on behalf of their arrival and in honor of their son, Brayden Bratianu, was throwing them a small welcome home party at the wizard's house, presumably Nakari's. Kyla didn't know who was on the guest list, but from the sounds of it, the Silavasis were a close-knit family, so most of them would likely be there. Now, if she could only get herself and Saxon invited. Kyla conjectured that, as a sentinel, Saxon would probably attend most formal and informal gatherings, if only to provide added security. But she also figured that his blood moon had given him a pass for a while. She needed to take another tack. A social inclusive angle. Kyla needed to convince Saxon that she was growing stir-crazy, eager to meet other female destinies, and desirous of learning more about their social customs, meeting her future kin. Was that how the House of Jaden referred to itself? It didn't matter. There was only one goal. To get to that house on Saturday. To blend into the woodwork, gain access to the Silavasi family, and to pray that the vampires would bring their kids. Brayden Bratianu strolled onto the rooftop terrace above Nakari's secluded brownstone, wishing he could sleep. As each day drew closer to Saturday, his excitement and anxiety increased. He hadn't seen his parents, let alone his little brother Conrad, in a very long time. And there was a lot of history, angst, and insecurity swirling around the relationship, not the least of which had to do with his uncanny resemblance to his biological human father, the fact that Brayden's hair, his eyes, and his features reminded his mother of years of abuse. Before she had filed for divorce, before she had been claimed by Dario Bratianu and ushered into the House of Jaden. Yet and still, Julian Lacusta had given Brayden some pretty good advice, and he intended to take it.
"Brayden, call your mother. Sit down with Dario. Hash the shit out before it festers. It may be the case that nothing changes on their end, that maybe they're just not good parents. But it's not about them, not in the end. It's about you and how you perceive things, how you feel about yourself. It's about those demons that haunt you in the dark, coming out into the light. It's about owning your own shit, so you can be free of it."
Beyond his apprehension over his parents' upcoming visit, there was also the psychic impressions thing, that indelible cord that stretched from Brayden's soul, like an IV port that he couldn't unhook, into the vein of the House of Jaden. The vision was getting stronger, and it was changing. Or was it more like a hallucination? He plopped his rear into the upholstered divan and stretched his legs out on the matching ottoman, folding his fingers behind his head as he gazed up at the sky. Dark, endless, and vast. The canvas was littered with stars. And then he concentrated on his latest vision. The first few times he had seen the rose, it had been a singular flower with two distinct tones, crimson red and raven black, one exuding passion, the other death and foreboding. But as the construct lingered, and it was more of a feeling than an image in his mind. The paradigm had slowly shifted. The single stem split in half, becoming two conjoined parts, two separate roses that were connected, not at the stalk but at the roots. The flower on the left retained its crimson petals, while the flower on the right remained jet black. But unlike the earlier visions, when the black hue had swallowed the color red, the black rose grew stronger, more vital, while the red rose began to wilt on the vine. Death and foreboding grew ever more powerful, while passion slowly died. Braden pinched the bridge of his nose, then massaged his temples, anticipating an oncoming headache, but the cranial throbbing never ensued. He was no longer plagued or assailed by the image, just constantly aware of its presence, like a mirage or a silhouette in the background, a part of the landscape all around him.
"What the hell?" he whispered, wishing he could shed the baggage. "Is someone fighting with their mate? Remembering a painful event from their past? Is someone about to have twin sons? One dark and one light?"
And if so, then the only son of Jaden Braden could think of was Saxon Olaru, at the end of the Cetus Moon. He never heard the wizard's footsteps. Nakari walked like a panther, even in human form.
"Can't sleep?"
the intuitive vampire asked him, strolling silently across the veranda. Braden sat up straight and slid his feet off the ottoman.
"Oh, damn, Nakari. Sorry if I woke you up."
Nakari chuckled, and Braden quickly amended his statement.
"I meant, darn."
Nakari flicked his wrist in a casual, dismissive gesture.
"No worries. A word or two here or there. It's not a major infraction."
Braden nodded, waiting patiently as Nakari took a seat across from him.
"So what are you doing up so late?"
the Master Wizard repeated. Braden sighed and shook his head. No answer.
"Worried about Saturday? Your parents' visit?" "A little,"
Braden confessed. Nakari nodded, allowing the silence to linger for a time. When at last he spoke, his voice was thick with compassion.
"I think it's going to go better than you imagine. Just a feeling," he added.
At this, Braden smiled. If the Master Wizard had a feeling, then Braden could take it to the bank. Nakari's powers were becoming legendary.
"Good to know,"
he mumbled, rocking forward in his seat and bracing his elbows on his knees.
"What's it like being a wizard?"
Braden asked next.
"I mean, as opposed to a warrior, a justice, or a healer. What does it feel like carrying all that magic around, inside your head?"
Although the question was seemingly out of the blue, Nakari relaxed in his chair with infinite patience, his forest green eyes darkening in contemplation. And then he shrugged.
"Hard to say. I've always had this bent, the magic swirling around inside of me. So I don't know any other experience, but I'd imagine it's not unlike being a warrior or a healer in theory. Marquise is always aware of his surroundings, who's coming and who's going, what natural objects can be used as a weapon. He's always alert and prepared. Kagan, on the other hand, is always analyzing mysteries. What makes things tick, how to change them, fix them, alter their organic properties. I guess I'm saying it's like a second skin. You just wear it without really thinking."
He braced two fingers beneath his chin in a gesture of contemplation.
"Why? What's on your mind, son? Still trying to figure out what route to take when you go to the university?"
Braden pursed his lips and tapped his foot on the deck, thinking.
"Yeah, that, I guess. And something else."
Nakari raised his brows and waited, once again demonstrating that infinite patience.
"And, well, you know how I reacted when Napoleon was assaulted by Lord Atamordna? How I was able to interpret the spell when the Dark Lord Okard switched Christina and Siapori? How I just sometimes get those feelings?"
At this, Nakari drew to attention.
"Yes. Why?"
Braden let out a long, fatigued sigh.
"Because it's happening again."
Before Nakari could overreact, Braden quickly rushed the words.
"Don't get me wrong. It happens all the time, in one form or another. Like you said, it's just a second skin. But lately I've been having headaches, too."
Nakari frowned and appraised him forthrightly.
"Does your head hurt now?"
"No,"
Braden answered.
"Not tonight."
Nakari nodded.
"But it has been. For how long?"
Braden thought it over.
"It's not constant or anything. Just every now and then. A twinge. Sometimes when I see or feel images."
Nakari interlocked his fingers and spoke in a gentle, calming tone.
"So you're asking if this is part of your personal magic? Something you will always contend with? Or are you asking me something more specific?"
Brayden glanced down at his hands, noticing how much larger, rougher, stronger they'd become.
"Both, I guess? If I choose to study wizardry, will I eventually get a handle on it? Learn to control it? And if there's something specific floating in and out, what do I need to do with it?"
Nakari pondered the question.
"I don't know if you'll ever be able to control it, Brayden. Not exactly sure how that works. But I can tell you that as a master wizard, you will learn to recognize it, flow with it, incorporate it. And yes, even master it at times. Use it to your own ends, for your own purposes. Channel it and focus it in the direction that you choose. As for something specific, something you can do right now?"
He paused to consider his words more carefully.
"You might try to manipulate the energy of it. Disperse it before it congeals in your head. Or your gut."
Brayden's ears perked up, his heart growing lighter with hope.
"How would I do that?" he asked.
"First," Nakari stated, "use your deep breathing, like I've already taught you. Imagine taking light in through your nose and out through your mouth, and see the light catching the image or impression and dispersing it back into the universe. That should help with the day-to-day premonitions, picking up on the small incidental nuances. They're not yours, so release them."
He tapped his fingers on the arm of the patio chair. "As for the more persistent stuff, pay attention, but not as a passive observer. Go back into the feeling or the vision and give it shape and substance. Draw a clearer picture, even if you have to override it to do so. Speak to it. Ask it questions. Who are you? What are you? Why are you here? And expect to get an answer. Manipulate the scenes or the action. Move the pieces around and see where the visualization takes you. My point is, you have more power than you know, son. Don't be afraid to use it."
Brayden rubbed his forehead, digesting Nakari's words. He could do that. Or at least he could try.
"And Brayden," Nakari added, drawing Brayden out of his musings. "Don't ignore your feelings, son. Remember what happened when Saber was impersonating Ramsay. You knew that something was wrong, was off. Something important to the whole House of Jaden. If you aren't certain, then bring it to me. Two heads are sometimes better than one."
At that, Brayden chuckled.
"Yeah, especially when one is a master wizard."
Nakari shrugged, his harmless, arrogant swagger showing.
"Okay," Brayden said. "Guess there's no time like the present."
He removed his elbows from his knees, sat back, and rested his hands on his thighs, meeting the vampire's paternal gaze.
"Check this out, Nakari."
With that, he closed his eyes, concentrated on his latest vision, the faint impression of the dual evolving rose, and sent it like a stream of information into the wizard's mind. Nakari grew restless in his chair, his spine noticeably stiffening.
"The red one, it's passion," Brayden offered, concentrating all his attention on the rose to the left. "And this one."
He moved his vision like a filmmaker might move a camera, zooming in.
"This black one is death and foreboding. When I first had the impression, it was one rose with two colors. But now, they're two separate roses sharing one vine," Nakari supplied.
"Yep," Brayden said, his heart feeling lighter.
"And how long have you been seeing this?"
Brayden glanced up and to the right.
"It started on Sunday night."
At this, Nakari tilted his head.
"The same night as Saxon's blood moon?"
Brayden thought about the timeline.
"Yeah, I guess. Maybe a couple hours earlier, but yeah, since then."
Nakari nodded thoughtfully. Have you said anything to anyone? Braden shook his head.
No, Christina is the only one who knows. And she only knows because she was there when I got a wicked headache. She walked me through the breathing.
Nakari's expression softened with approval. And other than the colors and the words, you haven't gotten anything else? No other meaning? No other impressions?
Nope, Braden said. Just a daily pain in my ass, figuratively speaking.
The contemplative vampire laughed aloud.
Oh, Braden. Touché.
And then his voice grew ever more serious.
I want you to play with this vision for a while. Since the energy is yours, the knowledge is inside of you. Ask questions, try to change the picture, redirect the energy, expecting a response, and let me know what happens. It isn't letting go because it's important, but it could mean almost anything, and apply to anyone. Dig a little deeper. Don't just let it pass.
Braden nodded in agreement.
And in the meantime?
Nakari sighed.
In the meantime, I'm not going to take this to Napoleon, not just yet. We don't have enough to go on, and I'm not going to bother Saxon in the midst of his blood moon. Hell, this could be anything. A dark one plotting, a difficult blood moon, a rocky relationship between a couple in the Vale. Even you reliving memories from your childhood or your past. Still, I'm going to play around with a couple of spells myself, and I'm also going to give a cautionary heads up to Ramsey and Santos. Maybe turn them into helicopter brothers.
Helicopter brothers? Braden asked, quirking one brow.
Yes, Nakari affirmed. Make sure they hover like a nuisance over Saxon and his destiny, just until he's fulfilled the demands of the curse. One never knows. You can't be too careful.
Braden's chest rose and fell, visibly relaxing. He felt like weight had just been lifted from his shoulders. He would have to keep this in mind for future reference. After all, what had Julian Lacusta told him the night they had talked in these same exact seats?
Maybe there were times in my life when I could have, when I should have, reached out to someone else. When just maybe, it might have made a difference.
Braden braced his feet squarely on the deck and stood up from his chair.
Thanks, Nakari, he said sincerely.
I guess I should let you go get some sleep.
The vampire shrugged.
Hey, we're all nocturnal by nature. It really isn't a problem.
Braden smiled, understanding, and then he murmured quietly.
You know what?
What? Nakari asked.
I like having you for a helicopter brother. Kind of makes life easier.
Nakari rose in such a smooth, fluid glide that Braden never saw him stand up. He was just suddenly taller. He held out his fist in a demonstration of camaraderie, and Braden gave it a fist bump.
16.
No, 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 no. Please, stop.
Sit down, Xavier barked.
Kiera Sparrow felt for the edges of the stiff metal chair behind her and slowly lowered her body into the seat, trying not to hyperventilate. The blindfold was too tight, and Xavier was too menacing. He had taken her from the warehouse around 10 o'clock that morning, and the rough-riding, musty van had trekked for at least an hour before it had finally come to a stop. Based on what she could feel, and then smell, Kiera was quite certain they were in the country, in a barn to be exact. The sounds of traffic had receded about a half-hour into the ride. The roads had changed from pavement to dirt. And when she had finally climbed out of the van with Xavier's assistance, she could smell hay and moist soil, fresh, clean air. The creaking of the wood when he had opened the barn doors, as well as the uneven earthen surface beneath her feet, had solidified her assessment. Now, as she sat trembling on a cold metal seat, waiting for whatever Xavier had planned for her, her stomach turned over in queasy waves, and she felt like she might just faint. Xavier stepped behind her, began to fumble with the knots, and just like that, he removed the blindfold.
"Welcome to my lab," he snarled.
Kiera blinked several times, trying to clear her vision. They were, in fact, in a barn, and the floor beneath them was definitely dirt. But this place wasn't meant for horses. There was an old wooden bench to her right, about the size of a kitchen island, and behind it there were several rickety shelves stocked with glass vials, mysterious containers, and an assortment of medical equipment. Half of it looked rusted. And then her captor's words sank in. "Welcome to my lab." His lab. What kind of lab? And why had he carted Kiera to this godforsaken place? In the middle of nowhere. Blindfolded, no less. She shifted in her seat.
"Where are we? Why are we here?"
A crisp slap across her cheek rattled the questions out of her.
"You don't speak. You don't ask questions. You just do as you're told. Understood?"
Kiera reached up to cup her jaw and brush away a cold, icy tear. This animal was going to kill her. She was sure of it. But not before he did all kinds of unspeakable things to her body. She felt her bile rise and bit down hard on her lower lip to keep from projectile vomiting. The last thing she needed was to puke on Xavier Matista. He would probably beat her to death. She watched in terrified silence as he reached for a phlebotomy tray and prepared to draw her blood. He did not put on a pair of latex gloves, and she shivered.
"What's that for?"
she asked in a panic, immediately regretting her outburst. He raised his hand and she flinched, ducking, while covering her face. He didn't slap her again. He just stared at her with those creepy, menacing eyes, those strange, pale amber irises rimmed in black, as he flipped his rough, unruly lion's mane out of his face.
"I can see you are not going to cooperate," he spat. "So I'll tell you what. I'll give you 3 questions. No, I'll be generous and give you 5. So think very carefully. And then, if you speak out of turn again, I will chain you to the wall and whip you with that rubber hose."
He nodded toward a set of hanging glass containers connected by a thick rubber tube. It looked like something Dr. Frankenstein might have used on his famous patient. Kiera gulped, still processing his words. He would give her 5 questions. Did he really mean that, or was he just playing a cruel, twisted game? She swallowed her terror and eyed him cautiously, trying to read his intent. His pale eyes narrowed as he waited. Okay, so maybe he was serious. She licked her lips. They were suddenly dry, trying to think of everything, anything, whatever she needed to know in order to survive.
"Who are you, really? And why was I taken?"
The massive male's cruel mouth turned up in a sardonic smile.
"I am a Lycan general from a land called Mir, and you already know my name. You were taken by witless humans who are doing my bidding to keep you from another, to study your DNA, and to exact my own personal revenge."
His strong shoulders stiffened as Kiera processed his words. A Lycan general from a land called Mir? What the hell did that mean? Lycan? As in lycanthrope? From the Greek origin for wolf? A person affected with lycanthropy? Or a werewolf? The bastard was clearly insane. But then her dream. Her stomach twisted into tighter knots. She would have to consider that later. And just where the hell was Mir, and why had he referred to it as another land? She reached deep inside for courage, considering the rest of his words. "You were taken by witless humans who are doing my bidding to keep you from another, to study your DNA, and to exact my own personal revenge." There were only 3 questions left. She couldn't waste them dissecting his mental illness. She needed to stick to straight, pertinent facts.
"Who are you keeping me from?"
she asked next, afraid she might be wasting a question.
"Saxon Olaru," he growled.
And that was it. No further explanation. Damn it. That didn't tell her anything. 2 questions left. She needed to be more deliberate.
"What's my sister's role in all of this?"
It might not have been an imperative question, but if Kiera was going to die at this general's hands, then she wanted to know why Kyla had betrayed her. It was human curiosity at best, but it ran soul level deep. At this, Xavier took a deep, contemplative breath, and it appeared as if he was considering his answer. weighing whether to give her a short, dismissive response or to taunt her with the truth. He apparently chose the latter.
"Your sister is a lost, twisted bitch who has been serving me and my human playthings for many, many moons. She is a vampire hunter, Kiera, and she has taken your place with Saxon as his destiny. She delivered you to me in order to achieve that goal."
Kiera's mind was virtually spinning. Kyla was a vampire hunter. Xavier was a werewolf. And Saxon, whoever Saxon was their prey. And just what the hell was a destiny? She wondered about Travis and Owen, but she wasn't going to waste her final question when she could just as well put two and two together. They thought they were hunting vampires too. They were in league with Kyla on this psychotic mission. And all of it, all the crazy, misguided pieces, centered around one person. This Saxon Olaru. Her eyebrows creased as she continued to imagine the unimaginable, to reason with the unreasonable, insanity and madness. If they were vampire hunters and Saxon was their prey, then Saxon was... he was a vampire? At least, according to Xavier? And if Kyla took Kiera's place, then Kiera's place was somehow with this Saxon? Which made Kiera Saxon's destiny. None of it made any sense. Yet and still, an eerie, far too real memory flashed in Kiera's mind. That night in the bar, standing in the bathroom with Kyla, that freaking blood-red moon. She shivered all the way down to her bones, dismissing the recollection for a moment. If Xavier let her live, if she ever left the barn, she would have hours of quiet, time alone, to contemplate this unsettling information, just so long as she didn't forget. She committed all of Xavier's words to memory, rehearsing his sentences in her head and pairing them with images, memory tricks, to make sure they would be there when it was time to recall them. And then she asked her final question, because she couldn't stand not knowing.
"What are you going to do to me? Will you let me go when you're finished?"
Xavier snarled beneath his breath, and heaven help her, because she must be crazy too. He sounded very much like a canine, a wolf. She shuddered, waiting for his reply.
"That's two questions, Kiera."
He glanced at the hanging rubber tube as if revisiting the whipping, imagining it in his sadistic mind.
"I'm sorry,"
Kiera muttered quickly, praying to the angels, to God, to anyone who might hear her, for mercy. He cleared his throat with a guttural rasp.
"I'm going to experiment on you, Kiera. Find out what makes you tick. And then I might keep you around for a while to play your violin."
He nicked the underside of her jaw with his nail. No, not with his nail, with a claw, drawing a warm trickle of blood.
"And then I am going to kill you before Saxon has a chance to find you."
He reached into the phlebotomy kit, withdrew a large syringe, and Kiera's sanity melted. The next sound she heard reverberated from within, like a blast from a seaborne foghorn. Kiera screamed, and screamed, and screamed.
17.
Saxon watched his destiny as she glided gracefully through the garden-level indoor swimming pool, her 5-foot-8-inch frame both sleek and muscular. There had been no red flag since he'd returned home the previous night, since he'd returned from feeding and speaking with Marquise. In fact, the day had passed without incident. Both he and Kyla had slept in, shared a cordial, engaging breakfast. Well, Kyla had enjoyed her breakfast. Saxon had enjoyed Kyla's company, and spent the rest of the day talking, taking walks around Saxon's property, and learning more about each other's pasts. Kyla had learned about Ramsey and Santos. The fact that Ramsey had always been a bit of a rebel, a hard-ass, while Santos was a bit more sophisticated. He harbored a deep sense of responsibility for his family, a lifelong need to take care of the younger twins. Yes, Ramsey and Saxon were two badass sentinels who could each kick ass whenever they had to, but they would always be Santos's baby brothers. When Saxon had shared the plight of his parents, Kyla had shown a great deal of sympathy, In fact, she had physically reacted to the story about Saxon's mother. The fact that Ruth Jensen Olaru had been staked through the heart by vampire hunters. The fact that their father Santiago had been killed by Dark Ones, ambushed in a cave nearly 5 years later, had seemed to break Kyla's heart. Her dark brown eyes had filled with tears. Comparatively, Saxon had learned that Kyla was an only child and a rebel in her own right, never feeling like she'd really fit in. Not in her family, not in her high school, and not in society at large. He figured that made sense for a predestined female, someone whose life had always belonged ultimately to the House of Jaden. Now, as another day and night had passed, and he watched her in the pool, he began to believe that they might just make it. At the very least, this new tack seemed to be working. Saxon would remain as amenable as possible and follow wherever Kyla might lead. She swam to the edge of the deep end, where he dangled his legs in the water. And to Saxon's surprise, she didn't hesitate to nestle between his knees and rest her elbows on his thighs.
"You're not getting in?"
she asked, glancing over her shoulder at the clean blue water.
"It's warm."
Saxon chuckled beneath his breath, the sound filling the vacant space all around them.
"I like watching you," he drawled.
She blushed.
"Yeah, but I feel like a specimen beneath a microscope. You should join me."
He slid effortlessly into the water and wrapped his arms around her waist, pressing a tantalizing kiss against the slope of her neck.
"What else should I do, Miss Sparrow?"
Despite the fact that the water was warm, Kyla shivered.
"For starters, stop tempting me."
She splashed him, broke free from his embrace, and playfully waded backward.
"Catch me,"
she blurted, twisting like a fish as she took off swimming in the opposite direction. Saxon found the water play enticing and funny. Kyla, a human female, wanted Saxon, a vampire male, to see if he could catch her. In the blink of an eye, he rendered his body invisible, swam noiselessly to the bottom of the pool, and moved slowly in Kyla's direction. She spun this way and that, twisting in the water, trying to locate his missing form. When she couldn't find him anywhere, she began to swim in earnest with long, smooth, even strokes toward the underside of the diving board. That was smart, all things considered. At least she would know that he wasn't above her, as long as the board didn't move. And her back would be to the wall, so she could watch the water displace if he approached her from the front. Note to self, Saxon thought. Don't underestimate your destiny. The thing was, he could control the molecules around him. And that meant he could glide without noticeably displacing water. Moving with the slow grace of an aquatic creature, he sidled up in front of her, grasped her by the waist, spun her around, and pulled her back against him. Then he arched his back and took off swimming, carrying Kyla on his chest like a life vest. She let her head fall back against his shoulder, clutched his hips for purchase, and laughed like she was having the time of her life as the two of them careened through the water and Saxon kept them afloat. After several minutes had passed, Saxon brought them to the side of the pool, lifted Kyla off his chest, and set her on the tiled ledge. Placing his palms on her smooth feminine thighs, he looked up into her eyes and smiled.
"You seem a lot more relaxed," he observed.
"So do you,"
she winked. He nodded.
"I am. Perhaps we just needed some time to adjust."
She considered his words, tilted her head to the side, then slowly moved an errant lock of his wet hair away from his eyes, her breathing growing deeper as she stared at each of his features one at a time.
"Penny for your thoughts?"
he asked. She licked her bottom lip.
"You really are quite stunning, Saxon. Sometimes you take my breath away."
The corners of his mouth curved up in a smile. Though she was beautiful herself, he couldn't return the sentiment, so he chose silence for a moment instead. Finally, when he had organized his thoughts, he decided to approach a deeper subject.
"Kyla."
She twirled her finger through her curly wet hair.
"Hmm?"
"Do you remember when you told me what you wanted? When you asked if we could wait?"
Her brows furrowed into a slant.
"When I said I wanted to delay the conversion and the pregnancy?"
"Yes," Saxon said. "That too." You told me you wanted to get to know me first, to learn more about my world. You said you wanted to meet my friends, other warriors, other women. And you wanted to wait until the last week because you didn't want to sleep together until we were both committed and ready.
I remember,
Kyla whispered, appearing to hold her breath.
Then you also remember how I responded. I told you I needed to give it some thought.
She bit her bottom lip and shivered.
I remember that, too.
Saxon absently kneaded his fingers against her thighs.
Well, I have given it some thought, and I do want to accommodate you, but I don't think I'm willing to wait until the very last week.
He leaned in closer.
What if we give it another 7 to 10 days, and then we reevaluate? I can wait that long to convert you, and I can wait a little longer to father our sons. But I won't let the clock tick all the way down to the midnight hour. I won't risk running out of time.
Kyla appeared to swallow a lump in her throat before glancing askance into the water. When she didn't respond, Saxon pressed her.
Okay, another penny for your current thoughts?
Her eyes lit up with mirth.
You never gave me the last penny.
He smiled playfully, shut his eyes, and held out his left hand, palm facing up. In his mind's eye, he visualized his dresser and the small jar of coins sitting on top of the mahogany wood. It took a great deal of concentration to focus his psychic energy in a straight line, ignoring the interference from the walls. No longer copper or bronze, the pennies were mostly zinc, which placed the atomic weight at 65.39. Aware of the gravitational pull around the penny and how matter moved through space, he began to link his own consciousness with that of the atom surrounding the object, commanding, redirecting, pulling, until he felt the penny lift from the jar and begin to float forward in the room. Relying on his memory as a guide, the dresser was 10 steps from the door. The door was 100 yards from the staircase. The staircase contained 7 steps on each successive incline, 6 feet of space on the landing. He continued to draw the penny through the house until the small copper-colored disc settled into his palm. He closed his fingers around it.
For you, madam.
Kyla gasped and covered Saxon's hand in both of hers.
How did you do that?
He shrugged one shoulder, tilting his head to the side.
Telekinesis, he said contentedly. Matter and Science 305.
Kyla wriggled her nose.
Matter and Science 305?
Saxon nodded.
Yes. One of the most coveted courses at the Romanian University, taken during a vampire's junior century. Matter and Science 305. Telekinesis, teleportation, and passing through objects.
Kyla's expression lit up with wonder.
That's amazing. Can anyone do that? I mean, anything like that, before you take the class?
We can, Saxon answered, although it depends on the vampire. But to really understand mass, gravity, and quantum physics, to understand them enough to become invisible at will, to create a holding cell, or to bring a small object with you as you pass through solid forms, that takes a great deal of knowledge, practice, and study.
Kyla giggled like a schoolgirl, visibly impressed.
Damn, I wish I could do things like that.
Saxon grew pensive.
Perhaps you will. After your conversion, we could pick one skill and start to practice. Many destinies use their minds to accomplish amazing psychic feats. Some things are easier than others, but most can be taught over time. We have an immortal lifetime, Kyla. If it pleases you, I will teach you.
An odd sadness, or maybe darkness was a better characterization, flashed through Kyla's eyes, and her light-hearted countenance dimmed.
Thank you.
She spoke in a monotone voice.
It's just, I had hoped. Well, I've been waiting for you to offer me something else.
Saxon paused. Well, that was an interesting, if not somewhat clumsy segue, he thought. What did Kyla want now? He tapped her on the tip of her nose and held her gaze with his.
What is my destiny desire?
Kyla forced the sadness out of her eyes, straightening her spine.
Over the last few days, she began, I've heard you chat with your brothers, on the phone.
She quickly held up her forefinger.
Not like a lot or anything. I mean, I haven't been eavesdropping, but I just overheard bits and pieces of short conversations.
Kyla,
Saxon prodded.
Out with it, love.
She nodded.
Well, you know how eager I am to meet your friends, to make the acquaintance of other destinies, to know someone who's already been through what I'm facing.
She paused as if gathering her courage.
I just thought...
Saxon waited. You just thought what? He wondered.
I just thought that maybe at some point you might invite me to the party.
Saxon frowned, confused.
The party?
She sighed.
When you were chatting with Santos on your cell the other day in the hall, you said we weren't going to some gathering. Something for someone named Braden, I think. Because of our blood moon.
She stared at the markings on her inner wrist and frowned.
I guess I've been hoping that you would reconsider and take me to any social events.
Saxon paused to replay his conversation with Santos in his head. Was she referring to the homecoming reception for Dario and Lily on Saturday night? That wasn't even a family affair. Well, at least not for his family. His only purpose there would be to act as a sentinel, and his brothers had that covered. Before he could reply, she extended her bottom lip in the barest hint of a pout. How absolutely petulant, he thought, and not in a cute, endearing way.
I mean,
she continued,
I guess it's okay if you're not ready or even if you're kind of ashamed of me. I'm not stupid, Saxon. I can see how hard you try, yet I can also see that you're not really into it. That you're not really into me. At least not yet. I can understand if you don't want to pretend around your community.
So it had been insecurity more than petulance. For reasons Saxon couldn't pinpoint, the entire shift in conversation still seemed mildly manipulative, more than it seemed sincere, and once again they were back to some enigmatic impasse. Kyla was being kind, Saxon was being unforgiving. Kyla was trying to express her feelings, and Saxon was being judgmental. For what it was worth, he was genuinely trying, yet something just remained off. Like trying to force two pieces of a puzzle together, pieces that just didn't fit. Nevertheless, he was willing to give her the benefit of the doubt. He was desperate to trust this blood moon.
Kyla, baby.
He deepened his voice, placing his hands on top of hers.
I'm sorry if I gave you that impression. In truth, I never gave it a second thought. Braden Bratianu is a young vampire in the house of Jaden, whose parents are flying in to see him on Saturday. They've been away from the Vale for quite a long time. It's really nothing more than that. Honestly, I wasn't planning on going.
She bit her lip, looked away, and frowned. He sighed.
But if you really want to go, then sure, I can make that happen. I'm not too ashamed to take you, Kyla.
Her entire face lit up. She unfolded his fingers and reached for the penny, tucking it inside the top of her bikini right above her heart. Smiling a hopeful, mischievous grin, she fished for more reassurance.
Really? You would do that for me?
He smiled.
Of course.
She exhaled in obvious relief.
Thank you, Saxon.
She tapped her fingers over the penny and added,
And I will always cherish this.
Then she bent her head to peck him on the lips affectionately. Despite his reservations, Saxon tunneled his hand into her waist-length blonde hair, feeling the wet, unruly curls glide through his fingers, and brought her head forward to deepen the kiss. All the while, he couldn't help thinking, Funny, she will always cherish the penny, when I think that was called flipping on a dime.
18.
Kiera Sparrow braced a hand beneath her aching, bruised ribs as she slowly turned off the overhead faucet and jets in the walk-through shower. She glanced over her shoulder at the steamy bathroom window and nodded.
She had hung her thick terry cloth robe over the alcove's ornamental ironwork on one of the decorative knobs, and that had concealed the majority of the bathroom's interior. Then, under the cover of rushing water and Johann Sebastian Bach's Cello Suite No. 1 in G major, the music pumping through the speakers, she had managed to open the window, remove the screen, and loosen all the remaining bolts to the iron bars with her hidden tuning fork. In addition, all the sheets she could safely shred had been torn into strips, knotted together and fashioned once again as ropes. They were safely tucked away in the bottom of the linen closet and stuffed between off-colored folded towels. Hopefully, those used the least by Owen. She could only hope that he would pull fresh linens from the top of the stack and never peer at the pile toward the bottom. Her breath hitched as she shrugged into the heavy white robe and slid the tuning fork back into the pocket. The pain in her sides, her cheeks, and her stomach was unrelenting. Xavier had certainly done his damage in the lab, slapping her whenever she looked at him sideways, kicking over her chair whenever she flinched away from an unwanted kiss, booting her in the gut and ribs as she scrambled to place the chair upright and sit like a good little lab rat once again, hoping to avoid his correction. It had all been a cruel, sadistic game to the headhunter, to the maniacal Lycan general. And Kiera was still surprised, as well as grateful, that she had escaped without being strangled or butchered or raped. Still, she knew her days were numbered. It was just a matter of time before Xavier went too far, before he grew tired of playing with his lab rat and decided to end it all. She could only hope that he would wait until Sunday, give her a chance to climb out the window on Saturday night. Kiera had overheard Owen speaking to Travis about an upcoming gathering, a group meeting of vampire hunters planned for 8:00 p.m. in 2 days' time. They were buying liquor, repopulating the heavy metal playlist for the digital surround sound system, and ordering catered food. That meant Kiera would likely be locked in her room, ignored for the duration of the meeting, and the noise would be sufficient to drown out the racket of her escape. Or at least she could hope. What she really needed was to convince Owen Green to allow her to take another shower, or better yet, a bath, to lock her in the room without tying her to the bed or a chair. She only needed 5 minutes to knock out the screen, tie the ropes to the window frame, and overcome her fear of heights. Come hell or high water, Kiera was climbing out that window. And if she fell or got caught? Well, then at least she'd die trying. She ran her hand over the hazy glass above the vanity to clear away the steam, shrinking back in alarm at the reflection of her black and blue eyes, at the swollen knots above her bruised right cheekbone. Despite her best efforts at valor, her determination to remain focused and strong, she choked back a sob and shivered. What the hell was going on? The entire universe was topsy-turvy. Nothing made any sense. Vampires and werewolves. Sadistic generals. Humans who hunted creatures from gothic fiction novels. Her sister being involved in it all. As her tears fell freely, her attention turned to another implausible subject. Saxon Olaru and Xavier's cryptic words. "She is a vampire hunter, Kiera, and she has taken your place with Saxon. She delivered you to me in order to achieve that goal." Kyla took Kiera's place with Saxon. Just what the hell did that mean? Kiera stared once again into the foggy mirror, as if the answer might come out of the glass. Who was this Saxon, and what was his role? In the past, in the present, or going forward? A part of Kiera wanted to crawl into a hole and hide from the entire non-reality. It was all just too fantastic. Another part of her almost wished it were true, at least the part about Saxon being a vampire. After all, if anyone could conquer a Lycan general, it would be another supernatural creature. Her head throbbed and she winced, partly at the pain, partly at the absurdity of her thinking. There were no such things as werewolves and vampires, and the only humans who hunted the latter had to be on drugs, demonstrably psychotic, or acting out some demented role-playing game. Nothing, absolutely none of this made any sense. A brisk knock on the door brought her back to her current circumstances. Reality or no, she was a prisoner in Owen's warehouse.
"Kiera!"
His caustic voice reverberated through the panel,
What the hell are you doing in there?
Kiara cleared her throat and glanced once more at the window, double-checking to ensure that everything was neat, tidy, and back in place.
Nothing,
she said, sounding innocent.
I was just coming out.
She heard him curse on the other side of the door, and she balled her hands into fists. Not so much out of anger or resistance, but to steady her racing heart, to channel all the desperate energy. Glancing upward toward the heavens, she whispered a plaintive prayer.
Dear Lord, please, please get me out of this. Help me somehow. Give me strength and courage. Help me make it until Saturday night.
What happened next could only be described as an auditory or visual hallucination, perhaps a stress-induced delusion, conjuring mental impressions of a sea monster, much like the mysterious design on the occultist tattoo her captors had stamped into her wrist. But it was as if a cosmic force answered back, a deep, rumbling, celestial chime that didn't sound altogether human, a thunderous echo originating from within, resounding from the tarnished cavern of an overwrought mind.
Try to reach Saxon. Your bond is strong. He may be your only hope.
Owen Green retrieved the stylish smartphone from his front hip pocket and prepared to draft a text. He was disgusted with Kiara Sparrow and her whole princess routine, the untouchable captive taking baths and showers, playing her violin and her classical music, the off-limits property of the headhunter Xavier. She needed to get her ass out of the bathroom. Obviously, Xavier didn't give a crap about the female. He'd beat her black and blue, and he obviously didn't love her music that much because he'd given the society the thumbs up. Apparently, the tyrannical headhunter had gotten all he needed from his trip to the lab on Wednesday. A cruel, iniquitous smile curved along the corners of his lips as he pressed the microphone icon and began to dictate his text in a muted tone of voice.
Travis, it's O, and I've got good news. This Saturday's meeting will be more than a get-together, more than a catch-up assembly. Xavier gave us the go-ahead. We can get rid of Kiara, and to my way of thinking, we can make this party for the ages. An opportunity for the newest recruits to finally slay a vampire, however indirectly, by taking out its destiny. We're gonna do it old school, Travis. Ritualistic killing. Slow, methodical, painful, and full of gothic symbolism. By the time we're done, the bitch will wish that Xavier had killed her. He actually inserted a smiley face. So get here early, because you and me, we need to prep. Oh, and delete this shit the moment you finish reading it. Here's to the society. Here's to the demise of the undead.
19. It was 10 o'clock, the night was unseasonably warm, and a soft nocturnal breeze swept gently through the canyon as Saxon Olaru strolled leisurely beside Kyla in their rose garden, answering curious questions about Dark Moon Vale, describing the various species of roses, and occasionally taking her hand to give it a reassuring squeeze. He was doing his best to be both a friend and a confidant, to make her feel at home, to give their blood moon the effort it deserved. As they approached a particularly exquisite arrangement of baby blue suntory roses, a feat that took 14 years of experimentation by Japanese and Australian researchers to create, they'd implanted the gene that led to the synthesis of blue pigment into delphinidin pansies. He felt a curious tingling at the base of his spine. It traveled upward along the vertebrae until it radiated across his thoracic, then cervical regions, and he suddenly jolted. It was no longer a faint, buzzing tingle, but a shock so intense that he gasped from the pain. Kyla immediately turned to face him, her dark brown eyes flashing with concern.
Saxon?
She whispered hesitantly.
What's wrong?
And that's when he heard the second voice. A faint, garbled sound that was so obscure and faded, he had no chance in hell of placing it. It sounded like a far, distant static crossing a radio wave, like something one might have heard over an old transistor radio. But there was music. That song. The one he had heard in Phoenix.
And then there was that dim, indistinct voice, ringing again, practically humming inside of his ears.
Saxon, can you hear me? It's Kiera.
He rocked on his heels and staggered to the side. That voice, that name, it cut through him like a knife. He closed his eyes and sent his senses seeking, trying to lock on to the telepathic bandwidth, but it was closed as quickly as it had opened. Saxon, can you hear me? It's Kiera. Every instinct in his primal vampiric body surged with an influx of adrenaline. His protective instincts shifted into overdrive, and his territorial nature came alive. A deep primal snarl reverberated in his throat, and he suddenly felt restless and desperate, shocked, reeling, and lost. He suddenly felt inexorably lost.
Saxon!
It was Kyla this time, bracing her hands on his biceps and trying uselessly to shake him.
What's happening?
Her voice was laced with panic. He stared into her seeking eyes, trying to anchor his body and his mind in the present space and time, trying to lock onto her presence.
I don't know,
he said ominously, angling his head to the side, trying desperately to hear that voice one more time.
I heard something,
he muttered. Kyla frowned.
What do you mean?
She glanced over her shoulder and surveyed the greenhouse, as if the two of them might be in danger.
No,
he croaked, registering her angst.
Not in the greenhouse. Not outside. I heard something in my head.
At this, she appeared momentarily taken aback.
You mean like voices?
He bit down on his lip, trying to make more sense of it. And then he studied his destiny's expression with more scrutiny than he had ever applied before. He took in all her features, her stance and her demeanor, and then he absently scanned her inner left wrist, tracing every line of the enigmatic markings, the brand of Lord Cetus, Saxon's visible claim. His tongue snaked out to wet his bottom lip, and he frowned.
Who is Kiera?
Kyla's face turned ashen as she quickly shook her head.
What? I don't know what you mean.
He steadied himself and rephrased the question.
Have you ever heard the name Kiera?
Kyla's expression grew inscrutable.
I don't know. Maybe at some point in my life I have. But no, I don't know anyone personally by that name.
Her eyes softened as she regained her composure.
Is that what you heard? A name?
Saxon rubbed the bridge of his nose as if assuaging a headache.
I'm not quite sure. I think I heard.
Kyla rose to the tips of her toes, cupped his cheeks in her hands, and gently massaged his jaw with her thumbs.
You're under too much stress, she whispered. I didn't hear anything.
She glanced around the greenhouse, scanning every corner, as if to check for enemies.
There's no one here but us.
And then she smiled ever so faintly.
A vampire and his destiny.
His eyes locked onto hers, and she held his gaze like a temptress, willing him to delve deeper, to come closer.
Saxon,
she whispered huskily.
Let me take away your stress.
She drew an instinctive circle in the center of his chest, right over his heart, seductively.
Let me ease your anxious mind. You've done so much for me.
She looked down shyly, and her high cheekbones blushed.
And I know what I said in the past, but I've changed my mind.
At that, she took a calculated step back, smiled like a vixen, and looped her thumbs beneath the dual thin straps of her tank top, sliding them off her shoulders, along with the straps of her bra. She didn't stop there. She moved her hands lower, to the waistband of her leggings, and shoved them over her hips. Stepping out of the pale green bottoms, she allowed her tank top and bra to follow suit, and stood brazenly, half-naked, before him, in a pair of V-shaped lace panties and slippers.
I think,
she whispered cautiously.
If you reject me now, I'll die. I don't think I could come back from that.
Her complexion reflected the stark vulnerability in her posture and her words, and her bare breasts rose and fell with each insecure hitch in her breath. Her eyes searched his, almost desperately, beneath long, liquid lashes. Saxon fought to catch his breath. She was a vision, to be certain, but his mind was still reeling. His heart still felt like it was breaking. His soul was so confused. Yet and still, the woman the celestial gods had chosen as his destiny was standing before him, naked, vulnerable, and unguarded, asking him, no, entreating him to take her to his bed. She was completely defenseless and totally exposed, and he was just gawking at her like a passive observer. He pushed all other thoughts out of his mind as he reached for Kyla's hand and gently tugged her forward, folding her into his arms. He slipped his fingers into her hair, pressed a kiss against her throat, and slowly trailed upward along the slope of her neck, lingering along her jawline, until his mouth finally sought hers, and he answered her pleading with a passionate kiss, putting all her doubts to rest. She gasped and shivered and kissed him back with unfettered, wild abandon. He lifted her into his arms.
"Not here,"
he breathed huskily, gazing down into her eyes. For reasons he couldn't comprehend, he did not want to take her here, not in that sacred rose garden. Despite the fact that he had built it for her, it somehow felt like treason. Commanding his body to respond to his female, he let his aboriginal instincts take over. Saxon knew how to please a woman, how to make her cry out with pleasure. And like a robot, one that had been programmed well, he placed one instinctive foot after the other, strolling out of the greenhouse, climbing the cliffside staircase, and heading for his bedroom. Kyla clung to Saxon's shoulders, shocked by how good it felt to be in his arms, praying that her distraction had worked. Who is Kiera? What the hell? And how was that even possible? She forcefully shoved the thoughts out of her mind. She could not ponder that question right now. She needed to pour 110% of her energy into deepening their fragile connection, taking Saxon Olaru into her body, and hopefully claiming his soul. Kyla needed to make the vampire hers, and she needed to do it convincingly. As he laid her down ever so gently on his king-sized bed, she shimmied up toward the headboard while casually glancing down, toward his groin, down toward his thighs, relieved to see the throbbing erection pressing against his jeans. At least he had found her attractive. At least his body saw its mate. She gasped yet again,